Waylay gave the man a head nod. Chief! His eyes came to me. You called the police? I squeaked at Knox. My sister was a terrible person, and I was definitely going to let her know that. But calling the police felt so final. 4. You're not staying here. Naomi.
You must be Naomi, the cop said.
I might have been mid-panic attack, but I kind of liked the way he said my name in a friendly drawl. Knox apparently did not like it because he was suddenly placing his muscled bulk directly in front of me, feet planted wide, arms crossed. I am, I said, peering around Knox. The oaf didn't budge when I nudged him in the back. The man looked back to Knox, and whatever he saw there had him grinning.
I'm chief of police around here, but you can call me Nash. It's real nice to meet you, Naomi. Sorry it's under these circumstances. Mind if I ask you a few questions?
Okay, I said, suddenly wishing I would have taken a moment to wash my face and fix my hair. I probably looked like a deranged zombie bridesmaid.
Why don't we have ourselves a chat out in the parking lot?
Nash said with a jerk of his head. Waylay's attention was back on the movie as she sipped lime green sugar. Sure. I followed him out and was surprised when Knox joined us. He headed right over to Nash's SUV, which read Knock 'em Out Police down the side, and leaned belligerently against the hood.
You're not necessary for this part, Nash told him.
Knox bared his teeth.
You want me to leave? Gonna have to make me.
I'm sorry, he's been like this all morning, I explained to Nash.
Honey, he's been like this his entire life, the chief countered.
It didn't hit me until they turned identical glares on each other. You're brothers, aren't you?
No shit,
Knox grumbled.
Sure are,
Nash said, turning his full wattage grin on me.
I'm the good one. Just do your fucking job,
Knox said.
Oh, now you want me to do my job. You can see how I'd be confused since...
Gentlemen, I cut in. This was going nowhere fast. I didn't have the energy to diffuse the tension between the brothers, and we had more important concerns. I don't mean to overstep, but can we get to the part about my sister? I suggested.
I think that's a fine idea, Naomi,
Nash said, winking as he pulled out a notebook.
Knox growled. Let's get your statement, and then we'll figure out what needs to happen next.
A man with a plan and a smile. He was certainly more pleasant than his brother. You're saying I can just take possession of a human being? I clarified a few minutes later. I really needed more coffee. My cognitive abilities were fading fast.
Well, I wouldn't advise on referring to it as taking possession, but in Virginia, kinship care is a way for kids to stay with a family member as guardian when they can't be with their own parents.
I might have been imagining it, but I thought I saw a guarded look pass between the brothers. So I would become Waylay's guardian? Things were moving so fast. One second, I was getting ready to walk down the aisle. The next, I was suddenly in charge of deciding the future of an 11-year-old stranger. Nash swept a hand through his thick hair.
Temporarily. You're obviously a stable, healthy adult.
What happens if I don't? I hedged.
Juvenile and domestic relations will place Waylay in a foster home. If you've got no problem staying in town for a few weeks while we figure things out, the law's got no issue with Waylay staying with you. If things work out, you can even make it permanent.
Okay. I nervously wiped my hands on the back of my shorts. What things are we going to be figuring out? I asked.
Mainly what your sister is up to and what that means for guardianship.
I'm in big trouble. I need money, Naomi. I bit my lip. She called me last night, said she needed help and wanted me to bring cash. Do you think she's in actual danger?
How about this? You focus on Waylay and let me worry about your sister,
Nash advised. I appreciated the theory, but in my experience, the only way to make sure a mess was clean to my satisfaction was to do the cleaning myself.
Did you bring cash?
Knox asked, his eyes on me. I looked down at my feet, feeling stupid and embarrassed. I knew better. I did.
She get it?
I focused on Nash's face since it was friendlier. I thought I was being smart. I had half of it in the car and left the other half in my suitcase. Nash looked sympathetic. Knox, on the other hand, grumbled something under his breath. Well, I guess I'd better get back in there and introduce myself properly to my niece, I said. Please keep me posted.
You're not staying here.
This proclamation came from Knox. I threw my hands up. If my presence bothers you that much, why don't you take an extended vacation? If looks could boil blood, mine would have turned to magma.
You're not staying here, he repeated.
This time he pointed to the flimsy door with the busted lock. Oh, that. I'm sure I can come up with a solution, I said brightly. Chief,
call me Nash, he insisted again.
Knox looked like he wanted to shove his brother's head through the already damaged door. Nash, I said, turning up the charm, do you know where Waylay and I could stay for a few nights? Knox pulled out his phone and glowered at the screen as his thumbs moved aggressively over it.
I could give you two a ride to Tina's place. It's not exactly homey, but she's a lot less likely to break in and bust up her own stuff, he offered.
Knox stowed his phone in his pocket. His gaze fastened on me, and there was something smug about his expression that made me irrationally irritated. That is so nice of you. I can't tell you how much I appreciate your help, I told Nash. I'm sure Knox has much better things to do than spend any more time in my vicinity.
My pleasure, Nash insisted.
I'll just pack up what's left of my things and tell Waylay where we're going, I decided and started back to the room. My relief at finally being free of the bad-tempered, tattooed Knox was interrupted by a thunderous rumble. A motorcycle with a man the size of a bear prior to hibernation rocketed down the street at a speed that was definitely not the legal speed limit.
God damn that Harvey, Nash muttered. Guess you better go get him, Knox said, still looking smug.
Nash jabbed a finger in his brother's direction.
You and me are gonna talk later,
he promised, looking none too happy.
Better hurry and uphold that law,
Knox said. Nash turned back to me.
Naomi, sorry to leave you in a lurch. I'll be in touch.
Knox wiggled his fingers antagonistically as his brother hustled back to his SUV and took up pursuit with lights flashing. Once again, I was left alone with Knox. You didn't have something to do with my nice, polite ride disappearing, did you?
Now why would I do that?
Well, it sure as hell isn't to spend more quality time with me.
Come on, Daisy, he said. Let's pack your shit. I'll take you and Way to Tina's.
I'd prefer if you kept your hands off my shit, I said haughtily. The effect was ruined by my unladylike yawn. I was running on fumes and only hoped I could hold on long enough to get away from the Viking before I crashed. 5. A vat of lighter fluid and a nap. Naomi. Hillside Acres looked more like a festive campground than a trailer park. Kids played on a small, well-kept playground on a patch of grass that hadn't quite submitted to the long Virginia summer. The mobile homes had picket fences and vegetable gardens. Creative color schemes and cozy patios added to the curb appeal. And then there was Tina's place. It was a single-wide trailer in the back corner of the park. The beige box sloped hard to the right, looking like it was missing part of its foundation on that end. Weeds that had fought their way through the gravel hit me at the knee. The trailer across the road had a cute screened-in porch with string lights and hanging plants. Tina's had makeshift cinder block steps leading to a rusty front door that hung slightly ajar. Knox was glaring again, but for once it wasn't at me. It was at the notice posted on the door. Eviction.
Stay here,
he ordered without looking at me or Waylay. I was too tired to be annoyed as he macho man stepped inside. Waylay rolled her eyes. She's long gone. She busted in here before the motel. On reflex, I reached for her and put my hands on her shoulders. She jumped back, looking at me like I'd just tried to give her a wedgie. Note to self, don't rush the physical affection. Where have you two been staying? Waylay shrugged. I stayed at my friend's house the last two nights. Her parents don't mind an extra kid for dinner. Dunno where she stayed. The only time responsible could be applied to Tina was when she was impersonating me over the years. Even still, I found myself horrified at my sister's approach to parenting.
It's clear,
Knox called from inside. Told ya. Waylay bounded up the steps and I followed. The trailer was worse on the inside than it was outside. The carpet had worn through in front of the door, leaving long, gnarled strings that stretched out in all directions. A recliner faced a cheap wooden console with the dusty outline of a TV stand. A small pink beanbag sat directly in front of it. She took the TV, but I grabbed the remote while she wasn't looking, Waylay said proudly.
Nice job, kid,
Knox said, giving her hair a ruffle. Swallowing hard, I left them in the living room and poked my head into the dingy kitchen. The contents of the cabinets had been emptied into an overflowing garbage can in the middle of the green linoleum. Boxes of cereal, cans of soup, long since defrosted pizza snacks. There wasn't a vegetable in sight. There was a bedroom on each end. The one with the double bed had an ashtray on either side. Instead of curtains, thin bedsheets were tacked directly to the wall to block out the sun. The closet and dresser were mostly empty. Everything had either ended up on the floor or been hauled out the door. On instinct, I peeked under the bed and found two empty bourbon bottles. Some things never changed.
She's coming back, you know, Waylay said, poking her head inside.
I know, I agreed. What the girl didn't know was that sometimes it was years between visits.
My room's on the other end if you want to see it, she said. I'd like that if you don't mind.
I closed the door on Tina's depressing bedroom and followed my niece through the living room. Exhaustion and overwhelm made my eyeballs feel hot and dry.
Where's Knox? I asked. Talking to Mr. Gibbons outside. He's the landlord. Mom owes a shit ton of back rent, she said, leading the way to the flimsy fake wood door off the living room.
A hand-lettered sign said Keep Out in glitter and four shades of pink marker. I decided to save the lecture on swearing for later when I wasn't mostly asleep on my feet. Waylay's room was small but tidy. There was a twin bed under a pretty pink quilt. A sagging bookshelf held a few books but was mostly dedicated to hair accessories organized in colorful bins. Was it possible Waylay Witt was a girly girl? She flopped down on her bed.
So, what are we doing?
Well, I said brightly, I like your room. As for the rest of the place, I think we can make it work. A little scrubbing, some organization, a vat of lighter fluid and a box of matches. Knox prowled into the room like a pissed off lion at the zoo. He took up too much space and most of the oxygen.
Get your shit, Way.
All of it? She asked.
His nod was brisk.
All of it. Naomi.
He turned and marched out of the room. I could feel the trailer shudder under his feet.
Think that means you're supposed to follow him, Waylay said.
Right, okay. Just hang tight. I'll be back in a second. I found him outside, hands on hips and staring at the gravel. Is there a problem?
You two aren't fucking staying here.
Suddenly too tired to function, I collapsed against the trailer's aluminum siding. Look, Knox, my bones are tired. I've been up for a million hours straight. I'm in a strange place, in a stranger situation, and there's a little girl in there who needs someone. Unfortunately for her, that someone is me. You made up for the asshole routine with the chauffeur routine. You can just stop with the macho inconvenienced thing. I didn't ask you for help, so you're free to go. I need to start cleaning this mess up. Literally and figuratively.
About done?
He asked. I was too tired to be infuriated.
Yeah, about.
Good. Then get your ass in the truck. You're not staying here.
Are you serious right now?
You two aren't staying in a motel with cardboard doors or a health violation of a trailer that's been broken into. Besides.
He paused his tirade to rip the eviction notice off the door.
This place ain't Tina's anymore. Legally, you can't crash here. Morally, I can't let you try. Got it?
It was the longest speech he'd made in my presence, and I honestly didn't have the energy for a reply. But he wasn't looking for one.
So you're going to get your ass in the truck.
And then what, Knox?
I pushed away from the trailer and threw my hands up.
What's next? Do you know? Because I haven't got a clue, and that scares the hell out of me.
I know a place you can stay. Safer than the motel. Cleaner than this fucking mess.
Knox, I've got no wallet, no checkbook, no phone or laptop. As of yesterday, I've got no job to go back to. How am I supposed to pay for...
I couldn't even finish the sentence. Exhaustion and despair overwhelmed me. He swore and shoved a hand through his hair.
You're asleep on your feet.
So, I said sullenly. He stared at me hard for a long beat.
Daisy, just get in the truck.
I need to help Waylay pack, I argued. And I need to go through the trash in there in case there's any important paperwork. Insurance, birth certificate, school records.
He stepped forward and I moved back. He kept advancing on me until my back met his pickup. He opened the passenger door.
Gibbons will let you know if he finds anything important.
But shouldn't I talk to him?
Already did. This ain't his first rodeo, and he's not a bad guy. He keeps important shit tenants leave behind and knows what to keep a lookout for. He'll call me if he finds something. Now, get in the truck.
I climbed up on the seat and tried to think of other things that I needed to do.
Way!
Knox barked.
Geez, keep your pants on!
Waylay appeared in the doorway wearing a backpack and holding two garbage bags. My heart shivered. Her life, all her treasured possessions, fit into two trash bags. And not even the good kind with drawstrings. Knox took the bags from her and put them in the bed of his pickup.
Let's go.
It was a quiet ride, and apparently, if I wasn't making conversation or fighting with Knox, I didn't have the energy to remain conscious. I woke abruptly when the truck jostled. We were on a dirt road that snaked its way through woods. The trees created a canopy above us. I had no idea if I'd just dozed off or if we'd been driving for an hour. Remembering my predicament, I whipped around and relaxed when I saw Waylay in the back seat, sitting next to the white, fluffy mound that was my wedding dress. Turning back to Knox, I yawned.
Great. You're taking us out to the middle of nowhere to murder us, aren't you?
Waylay snickered behind me. Knox, stayed stubbornly silent as we bumped along the dirt drive.
Whoa!
Waylay's exclamation had me focusing on the view through the windshield. A wide creek meandered alongside the road before curling back into the woods. Just ahead, the trees thinned, and I spotted the whoa. It was a large log home with a wide front porch that wrapped around one side of the first floor. Knox continued down the drive past the house.
Bummer,
Waylay muttered under her breath when we drove on. Around the next bend, I spied a small cabin with dark siding tucked into a copse of trees.
That's my place, Knox said. And that's yours.
Just beyond it was a storybook-looking cottage. Pine trees towered over it, offering shade from the summer sun. Its white, board and batten exterior was charming. The small front porch with cheery blue planks, inviting. I loved it. Knox turned into the short gravel drive and turned off the engine.
Let's go, he said, climbing out.
I guess we're here, I whispered to Waylay.
We both exited the truck.
It was cooler here than in town. Quieter, too. The rumble of motorcycles and traffic was replaced with the buzz of bees and the far-off drone of an airplane. A dog barked nearby. I could hear the creek as it burbled its way through whispering trees somewhere behind the cottage. The warm breeze carried the scent of flowers and earth and summer sunshine. It was perfect. Too perfect for a runaway bride with no wallet. Knox? He ignored me and carried Waylay's bags and my suitcase to the front porch.
We're staying here?
Waylay asked as she pressed her face to the front window to peer inside.
It's dusty and probably stale as hell,
Knox said as he propped open the screen door and pulled out his keys.
Hasn't been used in a while. You'll probably need to open the windows, air it out.
Why he had a key to a cottage that looked like it lived on the pages of my favorite fairy tale was on my list of questions. Just above that were questions concerning rent and security deposits. Knox, I tried again. But he'd gotten the door open, and suddenly I was standing on the wide wood plank floor of a cozy living room with a tiny stone fireplace. There was an old roll-top desk crammed into an alcove between the stairs to the second floor and the coat closet. Windows brought the outdoors inside.
Seriously, we get to stay here? Waylay asked, her skepticism mirroring my own.
Knox dropped our bags at the foot of the tiny staircase.
Yeah.
She stared at him for a beat, then shrugged.
Guess I'll go check out the upstairs. Wait, take off your shoes, I told her, not wanting to track any dirt inside.
Waylay glanced down at her filthy sneakers. There was a hole in the toe of the left one, and a pink heart charm clipped to the laces of the right. With an extravagant eye roll, she towed them off and carried them upstairs. Knox's mouth pulled up in the corner as we watched her go, pretending she wasn't the least bit excited or curious.
Damn it, Viking!
The idea of spending a few weeks in a postcard-perfect cottage far away from the mess I'd left behind was intoxicating. I could organize the hell out of the shambles of my life while I sat on the back porch and watched the creek flow by, if I could afford it.
Now what's your problem?
He asked, stepping into the dollhouse-sized kitchen and staring out the window over the sink.
You mean, what's wrong, Naomi? Well, I'll tell you, Knox. Now Waylay's excited about this place, and I don't even know if I can afford it. She's going to be disappointed on top of abandoned. What if we end up back at the motel tonight?
You're not going back to the motel.
What's the rent?
I asked, biting my lip. He turned away from the view, leaned against the counter, looking annoyed.
Dunno.
You have a key to this place, and you don't know?
Rent depends,
Knox said, reaching out to sweep a layer of dust off the top of the old marshmallow white fridge.
On what?
He shook his head.
On who?
Fine, who?
Liza J., your new landlord.
My new landlord?
And does this Liza J. even know that we're here?
I wasn't conscious of gravitating toward him until my toes brushed the tips of his boots. Those blue-gray eyes were on me, making me feel like I was under a magnifying glass.
If she doesn't, she will soon. She's rough around the edges, but she's got a soft spot,
he said, gaze boring into me. I was too tired to do anything but glare back at him.
I picked our rooms,
Waylay shouted from upstairs, breaking our staring contest.
We good?
He asked quietly.
No, we're not good. I don't even know where we are or how to get back to town. Do you have Uber here? Are there bears?
His lips quirked, and I felt my face flush. He was studying me in a way that people didn't do in polite company.
Dinner,
he said.
Huh?
Was my erudite reply. I knew he wasn't trying to ask me out, not after we'd spent an entire morning hating each other.
7. At the big house down the road. That's Liza J's. She'll want to meet you.
If she doesn't know she's my landlord, she's certainly not expecting us for dinner, I pointed out.
Dinner. 7. She'll be expecting you by then.
I was not comfortable with this kind of invitation. What am I supposed to bring? Where's the closest store? Does she like wine?
Hostess gifts were not just respectful. In this case, they would set the tone of a good first impression. His lips quirked as if my angst amused him.
Go take a nap, Naomi. Then go to dinner at Liza J's.
He turned and headed for the door.
Wait!
I hurried after him, catching him on the porch.
What do I say to Waylay?
I didn't know where the question had come from or the panicky note in my voice. I wasn't a panicker. I performed miracles under pressure.
What do you mean, what do you say?
What do I tell her about her mom and me and why we're here?
Tell her the truth.
I'm not sure what that is.
He started down the porch steps and again, panic clawed at my throat. The only man I knew in this town was abandoning me with a child I didn't know, no transportation, and only the crap my sister hadn't stolen from me.
Knox!
He stopped again and swore.
Christ, Naomi. Tell her her mom left her with you and you're looking forward to getting to know her. Don't make it more complicated than it has to be.
What if she asks when Tina's coming back? What if she doesn't want to stay with me? Oh, God, how do I make her listen to me?
He stepped back up onto the porch and into my space, then did something I never saw coming. He grinned. Full-on, panty-melting, 100% wattage grinned. I felt woozy and hot, and like I didn't know how any of my joints worked anymore.
Wow,
I whispered.
Wow what?
He asked.
You smiled, and it was just seriously wow. I had no idea you could look like that. I mean, you already look like...
I waved my hand awkwardly in front of him.
You know, but then you add the smile and you look almost human.
His smile was gone and the familiar annoyance was back.
Jesus, Daisy, get some sleep. You're babbling like an idiot.
I didn't wait to watch him drive away. Instead, I went back inside and closed the door. Now what the hell am I going to do? Sleep deserted me abruptly, leaving behind a groggy, panicked confusion. I was face down on a bare mattress, a scrub brush still clutched in one hand. The room slowly came into focus as my eyes and brain returned to the land of the living,
Warner. Grr. Tina. Ugh. Carr. Damn it. Waylay. Holy crap. Cottage. Adorable. Knox. Grumpy. Sexy. Horrible. Yet helpful. The timeline of the last 24 hours intact, I pried myself off the mattress and sat up. The room was small, but cute, just like the rest of the place. Paneled walls painted a bright white, antique brass bed. There was a tall dresser opposite the bed, and a skinny table painted peacock blue tucked under the window that overlooked the meandering creek. I heard someone humming downstairs and remembered, Waylay. Damn it, I muttered, jumping off the bed. My first day on the job as a guardian, and I'd left my new charge unattended for who knew how long. She could have been abducted by her mother or mauled by a bear while I indulged in an afternoon nap. I sucked, I decided as I raced down the stairs. Geez, don't break your neck or anything. Waylay sat at the kitchen table, swinging a bare foot while she chowed down on what appeared to be a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, with thick white bread and enough jelly to cause instant cavities. Coffee, I croaked at her. Man, you look like a zombie. Zombie needs coffee. Soda in the fridge. Soda would have to do. I stumbled my way to the refrigerator and opened it. I was halfway through the can of Pepsi before I realized there was food inside. Where food from? I rasped. I was not an easy waker from naps. In the morning, I could bound out of bed with the energy of a sugared-up kindergarten class, but post-nap Naomi wasn't pretty or coherent. Waylay gave me a long look. Are you trying to ask me where the food came from? I held up a finger and downed the rest of the soda. Yeah, I wheezed finally as the cold caffeine and sugar burned my throat. That. I paused to burp indelicately. Excuse me. Waylay smirked. Chief Nash had a delivery lady drop off a bag of groceries while you were drooling all over your bed. My eyeballs felt gritty as I blinked. The chief of police had seen to delivering food that I'd been too unconscious to provide for my niece. I was not going to get a gold star in guardianship today. Crap, I muttered.
It's not crap, Waylay argued around a huge bite of PB&J. There's some candy and some chips.
I needed to claw my way back up the scale toward responsible adult and needed to do it fast.
We need a list, I decided, scrubbing my hands over my eyes. We need to figure out how far we are from civilization, how to get there, what supplies we need for the next day or two.
Coffee. I definitely needed coffee.
It's like half a mile to town, Waylay said.
She had a smear of jelly on her chin, and besides her "my aunt is a lunatic" expression, she looked adorably childlike.
Why are your arms and knees all scraped up?
I glanced down at the abrasions on my skin.
I climbed out of a church basement window. Cool. So we're going into town?
Yes. I just need to take a kitchen inventory, I decided, finding my purse on the counter and digging out my trusty notebook and pen. Coffee. Food. Transportation? Job? New purpose in life?
We can take the bikes, Waylay piped up.
Bikes? I repeated.
Yeah, Liza J dropped them off. Said we have to come to dinner tonight, too.
You met our landlord? I squeaked. Who else stopped by? The mayor? Exactly how long have I been asleep? Her eyes went wide and serious.
Aunt Naomi, you've been asleep for 2 whole days.
What?
She smirked. Just messing with you. You were out for an hour.
Hilarious. Just for that, I'm buying Brussels sprouts and carrots. She wrinkled her nose.
Gross.
Serves you right, smarty pants. Now make me a sandwich while I tackle this inventory.
Fine, but only if you think about brushing your hair and washing your face before we go out in public. I don't want to be seen with Aunt Zombie.
6. Asparagus and a Showdown. Naomi. At this minute, I was supposed to be jet-lagged and wandering the streets of Paris on my honeymoon. Instead, I was clinging to the handlebars of an ancient 10-speed bike, trying not to tip over. It had been years since my ass had met a bike seat. Every bump and rut on the gravel road jarred both my teeth and my lady parts. The one and only time I'd talked Warner into trying one of those tandem bikes at the beach, we'd ended up headfirst in a shrub outside the kite store. Warner had not been pleased. There were a lot of things that hadn't pleased Warner Dennison III, things I should have paid more attention to. The thicket of woods passed in a buzzing blur as we rode through swirls of gnats and the thick southern humidity. Beads of sweat trickled down my spine. "Are you coming or what?" Waylay called from what seemed like a mile ahead. She was riding a rusty boy's bike with her arms dangling at her sides. "What's your middle name?" I yelled back.
"Regina."
"Waylay Regina Witt, you put both hands on your handlebars this instant."
"Oh, come on. You're not one of those fun-hating ants, are you?"
I pedaled harder until I caught up.
"I am lots of fun," I huffed, partially because I was offended, but mostly because I was out of breath.
Sure, maybe I wasn't a ride with no hands or a sneak out of a sleepover to go kiss boys fun or a call in sick to go to a concert fun kind of gal, but I didn't hate fun. There was usually just too much that needed doing before I could get to the fun.
"Town's this way,"
Waylay said, gesturing to the left with a flick of her chin. It was such a Tina gesture that it took away what remaining breath I had. We abandoned gravel for smooth asphalt, and within minutes I spotted the outskirts of Knockemout up ahead. For a second, I lost myself in the historic familiarity of a bike ride, the sun on my face and arms, the warm air as it brushed over my skin, the call-and-response of a billion insects in the throes of summer. I'd been an 11-year-old on a bike once, heading out for adventure into the morning swelter and not returning home until I got hungry or the fireflies came out. There were sprawling horse farms on the outskirts of town with slick fences and emerald green pastures. I could almost smell the wealth and privilege. It reminded me of Warner's parents' country club. Four bikers in worn denim and leather roared past us on motorcycles, the engine rumble a vibration in my bones as they escaped the confines of town. Horse people and bikers. It was a unique combination. The farms disappeared and were replaced by tidy homes on tidy lots that got closer and closer together until we were on the main street. Traffic was light, so I was able to pay more attention to the downtown area than I had this morning. There was a farm supply store and a gift shop next to the mechanic. Opposite was a hardware store and the pet store where my Volvo had been stolen.
"Grocery store's this way,"
Waylay called from ahead of me as she took another left turn much faster than I felt prudent.
"Slow down!"
Great. Half a day in my care, and my niece was going to end up knocking out her front teeth by riding face first into a stop sign. Waylay ignored me. She zipped down the block and into the parking lot. I added bike helmets to my mental shopping list and followed her. After parking our bikes on the rack by the front door, I pulled out the envelope I'd, thankfully, hidden in a box of tampons. Minutes before I was supposed to walk down the aisle, my mother had handed me a card full of cash. It was supposed to be our wedding present, spending money for the honeymoon. Now it was the only money I had access to until I could replace my stolen credit and debit cards. I shuddered to think how much money I'd stupidly shelled out of my own savings for the wedding that never happened.
"Guess you can't buy too many Brussels sprouts since we're on bikes,"
Waylay observed smugly.
"Guess again, smarty pants,"
I said, pointing at the sign in the window. "Home delivery available."
"Aw, man," she groaned.
"Now we can get a truckload of vegetables," I said cheerily.
"No," What do you mean, no? I demanded, waggling stalks of asparagus at Waylay. No to asparagus, Waylay said. It's green.
You don't eat green foods?
Not unless it comes in candy form.
I wrinkled my nose.
You have to eat some vegetables. What about fruits? I like pie, she said, poking suspiciously at a bin of mangoes as if she'd never seen them before. What do you usually eat for dinner with your mom?
I had no idea whether Tina was a touchy subject or if she routinely left Waylay to fend for herself. I felt like I was blindfolded and being forced to shuffle out onto a frozen lake. The ice would break under my feet sooner or later. I just didn't know where or when. Her shoulders hiked up toward her ears.
Dunno, whatever was in the fridge.
Leftovers? I asked hopefully.
I make easy mac and frozen pizzas, sometimes nuggets, Waylay said, growing bored with the mangoes and moving on to frown at a display of green leaf lettuces. Can we get Pop-Tarts?
I was getting a headache. I needed more sleep and coffee, not necessarily in that order.
Maybe, but first we have to agree on a few healthy foods.
A man in a Grover's Groceries apron turned the corner into produce. His polite smile vanished when he caught sight of us. Eyes narrowed, lip curled. He looked as if he'd just spotted us drop-kicking a plastic light-up baby Jesus in an outdoor nativity scene.
Hello, I said, adding an extra punch of warmth to my smile.
He gave a harumph in our direction and stalked off. I glanced at Waylay, but either she hadn't noticed the eye daggers or she was immune. So much for Southern hospitality. Though we were in Northern Virginia. Maybe they didn't do the Southern hospitality thing here. Or maybe the man had just found out that his cat had a month to live. You never knew what people were going through behind the scenes. Waylay and I worked our way around the store, and I noticed a similar reaction from a few other employees and patrons. When the woman behind the deli counter threw the pound of sliced turkey breast at me, I'd had enough. I made sure Waylay was busy leaning over an open freezer of chicken nuggets.
Excuse me, I'm new here. Am I breaking some sort of store etiquette that results in hurled deli meats?
Ha! You ain't fooling me, Tina Witt. Now you gonna pay for that turkey or try to stuff it in your bra like last time?
And there was my answer.
I'm Naomi Witt, Tina's sister and Waylay's aunt. I can assure you I've never stuffed deli meat in my bra.
Bullshit,
she said it, cupping a hand to her mouth like she was using a bullhorn.
You and that kid of yours are no good shoplifting pains in the ass.
My conflict resolution skills were limited to people-pleasing. Usually I would squeak out a terrified apology and then feel compelled to buy the offended party some kind of small, thoughtful gift. But today I was tired.
Okay. You know what? I don't think you're supposed to talk to patrons like that, I said.
I was going for firm and confident, but it came out tinged with hysteria.
And you know what else? Today I've been yelled at, robbed twice, and turned into an inexperienced insta-parent, and that was before lunch. I've slept about an hour in the last 2 days, and you don't see me hurling deli meat around. All I ask from you is that you treat me and my niece with a modicum of respect as a paying customer. I don't know you. I've never been here before. I'm sorry for whatever my sister did with her breasts and your meat, but I'd really like this turkey sliced thinner.
I pushed the package back over the top of the cooler at her. Her eyes were wide in that, not sure how to handle this unhinged customer way.
You're not shitting me? You're not Tina.
I am not shitting you.
Damn it, I should have gone for the coffee first.
Aunt Naomi, I found the Pop-Tarts,
Waylay said, appearing with an armload of sugary breakfast treats.
Great, I said.
So, I said, sliding a strawberry kiwi smoothie in front of Waylay and taking the seat across from her. Justice, the man of my dreams, had made my afternoon latte in a mug the size of a soup bowl.
So what?
Waylay asked sullenly. Her sneakered foot was kicking the pedestal leg of the table. I wished I hadn't run over my phone at the rest stop so I could search for ways to break the ice with kids.
What have you been doing this summer?
She looked me in the eyes for a long beat, then said,
What's it to you?
People with kids made it look easy to talk to them. I stuck my face in my bowl o' latte and slurped, praying for inspiration.
Thought you two ladies could use a little snack,
Justice said, sliding a plate of cookies onto the table.
Fresh out of the oven.
Waylay's blue eyes went wide as she took in the plate and then looked up into Justice's face with suspicion.
Thank you, Justice. That's so sweet of you, I said.
I gave my niece a nudge.
Yeah, thanks, Waylay said.
She didn't reach for a cookie but sat there staring at the plate. This was an example I felt confident setting. I snatched up a peanut butter cookie and, between guzzles of my coffee, took a bite.
Oh, my God, I managed. Justice, I know we just met, but I'd be honored if you marry me.
She's already got the wedding dress, Waylay said.
He laughed and flashed the gold band on his left hand.
It devastates me to say I'm already spoken for.
The good ones always are, I sighed.
Waylay's fingers furtively moved closer to the plate.
My favorite is the chocolate chip, Justice said, pointing at the biggest cookie on the plate.
With a wink, he was gone. She waited until he was behind the counter before snatching the cookie off the plate.
Mmm, so good,
I mumbled, my mouth full of cookie goodness. She rolled her eyes.
You're so weird.
Shut up and eat your cookie. Her eyes narrowed and I grinned.
Kidding. So what's your favorite color?
We were on question 10 of my half-assed getting-to-know-you icebreaker when the door to the cafe flew open and a woman strolled inside in ripped tights, a short denim skirt, and a Lenny Kravitz t-shirt. She had wild dark hair worn in a high ponytail, several earrings, and a lotus flower tattooed on her forearm. I couldn't tell if she was in her 30s or her 40s.
There you are,
she said, grinning around a lollipop in her mouth when she spotted us. The friendly greeting made me immediately suspicious. Everyone thought I was Tina, which meant if someone was happy to see me, they were probably a terrible person. The woman grabbed a chair, spun it around backwards, and flopped down at our table.
Ooh, those look good.
She helped herself to a cookie with red frosting, trading lollipop for baked good.
So, Naomi, she began.
Do we know you? Our uninvited guest slapped herself in the forehead.
Whoops, manners. I'm already several steps ahead in our relationship. You'll just have to catch up. I'm Sherry Fiasco.
Sherry Fiasco? She shrugged.
I know, sounds made up, but it's not. Justice, I'll take a double espresso to go, she called.
My future husband raised a hand without turning around from the order he was working on.
You got it, Fee.
So as I was saying, in my head we're already friends, which is why I have a job for you, she said, biting the cookie in half. Hey, Way.
Waylay studied Sherry over her smoothie.
Hey.
So what do you say?
Sherry asked, shimmying her shoulders.
Huh? Aunt Naomi's kind of a planner, Waylay explained. She wrote 3 lists so far today.
Ah, a look before you leap type, Sherry said, nodding sagely. Okay, I'm a business manager, which puts me in charge of several small businesses in the area. One of them is down a server and desperately needs someone who can deliver beer and be generally charming.
A waitress? I'd spent the last 5 years of my life cooped up in an office answering emails, pushing papers, and settling human resource issues via carefully worded emails. Being on my feet and around people all day sounded like it might be fun.
It's honest work. The tips are great. The uniforms are cute. And the rest of the staff is a hoot. Mostly,
Sherry said. I'd need to arrange childcare, I hedged.
For who?
Waylay demanded, her forehead scrunched up.
For you, I said, ruffling her hair.
She looked appalled and dodged my hand. I don't need a babysitter. Just because you're used to doing something one way doesn't mean it's the right way, I told her. You've spent a lot of time looking out for yourself. But that's my job now. I'm not about to leave you alone while I go to work.
That's stupid. I'm not a baby.
No, you're not, I agreed. But adult supervision is a necessity. Wei Lei muttered something that sounded suspiciously like bullshit. I decided to pick my battles and pretend I hadn't heard.
If that's your only reservation, I can easily find someone to hang out with Wei here while you rake in the tip money.
I chewed on my lower lip. I wasn't a fan of having to decide things on the spot. There were pros and cons to Wei, research to do, routes to calculate, schedules to firm up. I wouldn't feel comfortable leaving Wei Lei with a stranger, I explained.
Of course not, Sherry chirped. I'll arrange a meeting and you can decide then.
Justice whistled from the counter.
Order's up, Fee.
Thanks, big guy, she said, jumping up from her chair.
Well, I'll see you two ladies later. First shift's tomorrow night. Be there at 5.
Wait! She cocked her head. Where is this job?
Honky-tonk,
she said, as if it were the most obvious thing in the world.
Bye!
I watched Sherry Fiasco strut out of the cafe with the confidence of a woman who knew exactly where she was going and what she was doing. Even when my 5-year plan was intact, I hadn't had that kind of confidence. What just happened? I whispered.
You got a job and then turned me into a dumb baby.
Waylay's face was stony. I didn't call you a dumb baby and I didn't officially accept, I pointed out. But I needed income, and the sooner the better. My checking account balance wasn't exactly going to support us indefinitely, especially not with rent and security deposits and utilities to worry about, not to mention the fact that I had no vehicle, no phone, and no computer. I picked up another cookie and took a bite. It won't be so bad, I promised Wei Lei.
Yeah, right, she scoffed and went back to kicking the table.
7. A punch in the face. Knox. Where you think you're going? I asked lazily from my lawn chair parked in the middle of the lane. The SUV's bumper had stopped a generous foot from my knees, a cloud of dust rising up behind. My brother slid out from behind the wheel and rounded the vehicle.
Should have known I'd find you here,
Nash said, his jaw tight as he pulled a slip of paper from his uniform pocket. He crumpled it and threw it at me. It hit me square in the chest.
Harvey said to pass this along to you since it was your fault he was speeding through town this morning.
It was a speeding ticket written in my brother's scrawl. I have no idea what Harvey's jabbering about, I lied, and pocketed the citation.
I see you're still an irresponsible asshole,
Nash said, as if there'd been a chance I'd changed in the past few years. I see you're still a law-abiding dickhead with a stick up his ass. Waylon, my lazy basset hound, wandered his stumpy legs off the porch to greet his uncle. Traitor. If he thought he'd get more attention or more people food somewhere else, Waylon wasn't weighed down by loyalty and didn't hesitate to wander. I pointed toward the cabin with my beer bottle. I live here, remember? Didn't look like you were slowing down to pay me a visit. Nash hadn't set foot in my place in more than 3 years. I'd done him the same courtesy. He hunkered down to give Waylon some love.
Got an update for Naomi, he said.
And?
And the fuck what? It doesn't involve you. You don't need to stand sentry like some ugly gargoyle.
Waylon, sensing he wasn't the focal point, meandered up to me and nosed at my hand. I gave him a thump on his side and the dog biscuit I'd stashed in the chair's cup holder. He took it and pranced back to the porch, white-tipped tail a blur of happy. I raised the beer to my mouth.
Saw her first, I reminded Nash.
The flash of anger I saw in his eyes was gratifying.
Oh, fuck you, man. You pissed her off first.
I shrugged carelessly. Same thing. Might as well just wander that law-abiding ass of yours back to Liza J's. I'll bring Naomi and Waylay to you. Can't stop me from doing my damn job, Knox. I got out of my chair. Nash's eyes narrowed. Give you one free shot, I offered, then drained the rest of my beer. One for one, my brother clarified. He always did pay too much attention to the rules. Yep. He placed his watch on the hood of the SUV and rolled up his sleeves. I put my beer in the cup holder and stretched my arms overhead. Never used to need to warm up before, Nash observed, adopting a boxer stance. I loosened up my neck and shoulders. Fuck off. We're over 40. Shit hurts. This was overdue. Fists were how we'd settled countless arguments for decades. Fight and move on, until the thing punching each other in the face couldn't settle. What's the matter? I taunted. Having second, Nash's stupid fist plowing into my face cut off the rest of my sentence. It was a bell ringer, right in the fucking nose. Shit, that hurt. God damn it, I hissed, prodding my face for deformities. My brother bobbed and weaved in front of me, looking a little too fucking proud of himself. I tasted blood as it trickled onto my upper lip. I got shit to do. I don't have time for conversation and kicking your... I let my fist fly, catching him in that goddamn mouth he was always running. The mouth he'd used to lay on the charm with Naomi. His head snapped back. Ow! Fuck! He swiped his arm over his mouth, smearing his own blood up his sleeve. Another bead dripped onto the shirt of his uniform. It made me feel perversely accomplished. Messing up Nash was always gratifying. We really gonna do this? He asked, looking up as his tongue darted out to taste the blood at the corner of his lip. Don't have to. You know how to stop it. She hates your guts. You don't even like her, he pointed out. I used the hem of my t-shirt to stem the flow of blood from my nose. Not the point. Nash narrowed his eyes. The point is, you always want to call the shots. Some brother. You're the idiot who doesn't know how to say thank you, I shot back. He shook his head, looking like he was going to back down. But I knew better. I knew him better. We both wanted this. Get out of my way, Knox. You're not getting past me today. I'd be happy to run you down with my truck. Say you were drunk and passed out in the middle of the lane and I didn't see you. Your ass would be behind bars before they even got mine to the morgue, I predicted. Something happens to either one of us around here, everyone knows the first place to look is the other one. And what does that say about our happy fucking family? Nash spat. We were circling each other now, hands up, eyes locked. Fighting a man you grew up tumbling with was like fighting yourself. You knew all the moves even before they were coming. I'll ask you again, Knox. Why are you in my way? I shrugged, mostly to annoy him, but partly because I didn't really know why I'd planted my ass between my brother and Naomi Doe-Eyes Witt. She wasn't my type. He wasn't my problem. Yet here I was. The whole introspection thing was another one of those time wastes that I didn't bother with. I wanted to do something, I did it. You just want to put your hands on something fine and mess it up, don't you? Nash asked. You can't take care of a woman like that. She's got class. She's smart. She's needy as fuck, right up your alley, I shot back. Then get out of my way. Tired of the conversation, I threw a jab to his jaw. He returned it with a shot to my ribs. I don't know how long we traded blows in the middle of the dirt lane, kicking up dust and hurling insults at each other. Somewhere in the midst of him calling me a fucking asshole and me putting him in a headlock so I could punch him in the forehead, I recognized my brother for the first time in a long-ass time. What in the holy hell are you doing? You can't assault an officer of the law. Naomi floated into my line of sight, looking exactly like the high-class woman I didn't want, exactly the type my brother did. Her hair was down now and daisy-free, draped over one shoulder, thick and sleek. Her eyes had lost the better part of the exhausted shadows. She was wearing one of those long sundresses that skimmed the tops of her feet and made men wonder what treasures lay beneath. She was carrying a bouquet of flowers, and for a second, I wanted to know who the hell had given them to her so I could kick their ass. Next to her was Waylay in shorts and a pink t-shirt, holding a plate covered in plastic wrap. She was grinning at us. Nash used the distraction to throw an elbow to my gut. The wind went out of me, and I bent to catch my breath.
"Face is bleeding, Chief,"
Waylay cheerfully observed.
"Got it all over that nice clean shirt of yours."
I grinned. The kid might have belonged to Tina, but she was funny as hell, and she was in my corner. Waylon abandoned his perch on the porch and ambled back into the road to greet the newcomers.
"Thanks, Waylay," Nash said, swiping at his bloody mouth again. "I was just coming to see you two."
While Waylay squished my dog's droopy jowls between her hands, Naomi peered around my brother at me.
"What is wrong with you?" she hissed. "You can't just start a fight with a cop."
I slowly straightened, rubbing a hand over my sternum. "Doesn't count as a cop. He's my brother." Waylon shoved his nose under the hem of Naomi's dress and stepped on her foot. He was a needy bastard.
"Well, hello,"
Naomi crooned, crouching down to pet him.
"His name's Waylon," Nash told her.
"Waylon and Waylay," she mused. "That won't get confusing."
My nose burned. My face fucking hurt. My knuckles were bleeding. But looking at her petting my needy-ass dog with an armful of flowers made everything else start to fade away. Fuck me. I knew what attraction felt like, knew what to do with it, too, but not with a woman like this, one who didn't know it was smart to be afraid of me, one with a wedding dress and no ring, one with an 11-year-old